For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And that's ball four, and a run will come in. It's 6-2.
It's got the natives a little restless all of a sudden. And we've got a powerful left-handed hitter coming to the plate, and Michael Busch.
And a 3-0. Too high. He's walked in another, and it's 6-3. How do you like that?
Digging it.
As Skeens looks on, they're all loaded up. 3-0. And that's ball four. He walked in another. And it's 6-4. And the fans here in Pittsburgh are frustrated. And now they have four of them in the inning, and it's a one-run game. Wow! The pitch. On the ground towards the hole. Cruz backhand. Won't have a play, and we're tied. It's an infield single, and it is 6-6. As the heavens unload and it really starts to pour. And with that, Andy Fletcher says, get the tarp on the field. The Cubs have come all the way back. Pirates taking the field, and we are ready to restart this ball game. How about it? All loaded up, 3-0. And he walked him on four pitches. Holy cow. And the Cubs now have the lead. It is 7-6. Holderman, a 3-1. Inside, he walked him, and it's the sixth bases loaded walk in the inning. And the Cubs have an 8-6 lead, a game they once trailed 6-1.
We've got to be looking at some kind of a major league record here, don't we?
The last team to draw six bases loaded walks in one inning was the 1959 Chicago White Sox. The Go-Go White Sox drew eight bases loaded walks in the seventh inning of a game on April 22nd. That was absolutely bananas. Highlights courtesy of the Marquee Sports Network. The Pirates threw 55 pitches in that inning, 20 for strikes. They threw 35 balls in one inning. And then, of course, hit a three-run homer and hung on to win the game. How do you lose the game where a team gives you six bases loaded walks? And my God, anybody ever have an anxiety attack out there where you've got the anxiety and you know it's building and you're like, you start to think to yourself, I must control this anxiety. And that, of course, is the worst thing you can think to yourself in order to control the anxiety. And it just rolls upon itself and feeds itself and is a freaking awful and horrible experience until you find your way to a Xanax or do whatever the hell else you need to do. That was going on with the entire pitching staff of the Pittsburgh Pirates. All of them. Can't find the plate. Can't find the plate. All right, I need to find the plate. I really need to find the plate. I can't find the plate. I still can't find the plate. Then the crowd starts to boo and gets all up in your business. And you're like, shut up. Shut up. I'm having trouble finding the plate and you're not helping.
I understand. I know.
I know. I'm aware of how poorly I'm doing. Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that. How about having my back a little bit? Then you throw a strike and the crowd cheers and you're like, oh, I get it. Ha, ha, ha. Just freaking miserable. Felt bad for a couple of Pirates jamokes during that inning. And then there's a rain delay, and they replace somebody with another somebody, and that somebody can't do anything. It's just, and still you lose that game? What the hell, man?
And I try not to complain about him too much because it can feel like a crutch. But man, that felt like the most Cubs game I've dealt with in a minute. Like, and they've been so good this year.
What
so
is that? What does that even mean, Sean?
It's just like
they won the World Series. Didn't that reset things a little bit?
I think it made it worse.
How did it make it worse?
We know what it's supposed to look like. And it hasn't looked like it since.
No, it really hasn't. Well, there's been times. There's been moments. Yeah. There were parts of last year. No, I understand. Look, I thought Elgin Clues said it well. This is a gift to have relevant and important baseball.
It sure is.
To be living and dying with every game. But you're so convinced that this is a year that's going to be good and that they're going to go out and get everything they need, that you want them to go out and get it now. Who's the bullpen option that you could go out and get? They're sorting it out. The hard part is they're sorting out everything they have in-house, and then they'll figure out. And they're not going to go trade for just like somebody, like Tanner Scott. You know what I mean? The closer for the Marlins, the lefty. You're not going to do that. It's not as much torture as it feels like, okay? There's no way that felt like a shiny, shiny, shiny piece of leather yesterday. No, it didn't. It wasn't quite like that. Unsettling? Unrewarding? Sure. But you're going to sort out what you have. And that means Ben Brown is your bullpen, possibly as a piggyback option or a long man, seemingly. I hope not to see Keegan Thompson in a game of consequence anytime soon. But then again, I said that last week. And then they sent him down and they brought him back up. What are we doing? What are we doing? I don't know. Now Hayden Wesneski to the bullpen. Maybe that'll solve some things. Jim and Steger has texted in and said, Happy Mother's Day to all the moms. Jim? I agree. Another texter has gotten in and said, Bill Terry, you're exactly right. Another texter. Wasn't the last National Leaguer to hit 400 in like 1930? Coming up on 100 years. Yeah, you bet. Ted Williams in 1946 is the last ballplayer to hit 400. The last National Leaguer to do it was Bill Terry. And I believe 1930, might have been 1931. But either way, that's my mom's baseball trivia question of choice. The woman has been gone since 1998. And yet I know that's the baseball trivia question that she had in her back pocket anytime she was forced to prove her baseball bona fides. She could talk about seeing some incredible, incredible players with the New York Giants and with the Trenton Giants minor league team. And, of course, being with my dad for a million games. But you could also talk about Bill Terry. Got some of your texts at 312-644-6767 about your mothers and baseball. Here's one. Growing up in a Mexican soccer fan household, I was the only sibling to love baseball and football. One year on my birthday, my mom gifted me my first baseball jersey, and it was Alfonso Soriano's jersey. Boy, is that a core memory for me. That's awesome. Absolutely love that. It's our job as parents, whatever your kids are into, even if you're not into it, support it. Let's get there. That's why I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson at the Chicago Theater with my son this week. Went and saw an astrophysicist speak. Yeah. Kid had a great time. Unbelievable.
That's so cool.
It was so great, man. And now he's a soccer goalie. He was goalie for the second week in a row for his sixth grade team, and he's like, Daddy, you gonna kick balls at me? Are you gonna kick balls at me? Why, yes, I am. So I need a bag of
thought you'd never ask.
It's not what I thought he'd, you know, what I dreamed of him asking, but he's asking. So I need a bag of soccer balls. I need some goalie gloves. I need a goalie coach. That's what I need, is a goalie coach. So I'll find one. But I'm gonna pepper that kid and teach him to attack the ball.
There you go.
With Guagi, like Roma Dunze. But that will not derail our baseball conversation. Texter, hey, Matt, I'm 52. My mom passed away 11 years ago. Lots of baseball memories with my mom. One of my favorites is when I would come home from school, walking or riding a bike, my mom would be in the living room, usually ironing, with the Cubs 120 or 305 game on. She would tell me the score as I walked in the door, provide a highlight or two from the game. God, I love that. She was also always at my high school games right behind the backstop as I pitched. And we would always give each other a smile and a nod before my first pitch. Mother's Day is tough, as you know, but I have lots of great memories with her to help get through the day. Have a good one. That's from Mike in Peoria. Mike, I love that. Love both of them. You as a player. But I got to tell you, just because it's even more relatable to those of us who never got to play at that high a level, like coming home from school and having her give you an update on what you've missed so far in the ball game as you pick it up from there, just freaking awesome. One more text here. The first game that my mom and I attended together was Cubs-Giants, 1968. We sat in the first row of the right field bleachers. Willie McCovey crushed one, landed several rows up, but my mom thought it was coming right at her and she ducked. After that, she always wanted to sit in the grandstands behind the screen, behind the plate. 1984, I won the ticket lottery for the first NLCS game between the Cubs and Padres. Took my mom. Wouldn't you know it, seats were located behind the screen. Fitting, Chuck. That's Chuck in Round Lake. Great stuff. Keep it coming at 312-644-6767. Got a top three Mother's Day highlights to bring you in a moment. But first, Tony in Wonder Lake. You're on Hit and Run. Good morning, Tony.
Steve's, good morning. How are you? And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that might be listening. My mom's been gone almost 10 years. And although my dad would attend the Sox games, my mom and I celebrated several times with the White Sox in 83. She was right by my side. We celebrated. And one of the greatest memories of all was us sitting around as a family at the kitchen table and my dad actually being able to take apart the World Series tickets in 2005. He had the binder, and of course, you know, it's sacrilege. You can't do it because you got to return the tickets. But being able to actually take those apart as a family and seeing them win a World Series together was just absolutely incredible.
That's great stuff, Tony. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. It's 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run. We're going to talk to Tom Hamilton, the voice of the Cleveland Guardians, in a little bit. But Mother's Day baseball memories brings a bunch of different stuff to mind. And one I always think of is Joey Votto having two homers already in his back pocket as he batted in the ninth for the Reds. This is 2012 on Mother's Day. Bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth.
Here's the 2-2 to Votto. Head deep center field.
Get up,
Hank
baby.
Hill going back at the warning track.
Oh!
Mother's Day present for Votto. Have a game, Joey. Three home runs, and look at this at home plate.
That's awesome. So, four great swings that day for Votto. Three home runs, including the walk-off grand slam on Mother's Day. Terrific essay out there from Joe Posnanski, one of my favorite people to read, writing baseball about Joey Votto's three-homer day on Mother's Day. How about this one in 2010? The Oakland A's, Dallas Braden, whose mother had passed away from cancer. And Braden has told this story before on The Score because he hated Mother's Day because his mother had passed. So his mother had passed, and he always had a difficult time with it. The night before Mother's Day, he got drunk, and he's hungover on Mother's Day, and he's got to pitch. He hadn't realized that he was going to pitch, and all of a sudden he has to pitch. And he throws 27 up, 27 down. And he does that while his grandmother, who was in attendance, who had raised him, his grandmother watched on. Here's the end of Dallas Braden's perfect game.
Pennington, he's got it. Throw to first. He did it. He did it. Dallas Braden has thrown a perfect game. Holy cow, he did it. Dallas Braden's grandmother
Becky Lindsay. Wow. I think that's who he pointed to first before he looked to section 209.
Man, his grandmother, and she made her way down onto the field as part of the celebration. So that's Votto, and that is Dallas Braden on Mother's Day. And this one isn't quite as important, but it's indelible, and I don't think it's ever going to go away. Because you knew the 2016 Cubs were good. You knew that they were playing up in a tree, is the way that Theo Epstein had described it. At this point, on Mother's Day 2016, they were 23-6, and in the 13th inning at home against the Washington Nationals.
Deep left center! Game over! Cubs win! Cubs win! Baez does it, 4-3 the final.
Pink ice cream for everybody. Well, there were plenty of opportunities for these Cub hitters to do something heroic this afternoon, and Baez delivers.
24-6 at that point. They would get all the way to 28-10. Outrageous. And the season ended very, very well. 35-14 they would get to, and the season would end very well. This is Bob in Muncie on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I called, but my call got a little longer as I was listening to the show. I called because my mother was a huge White Sox fan, and one of the famous things that she would always repeat over and over again was when Harry Carey used to pronounce all the names of the players backwards. And it was so funny because, like, one of her favorites was Sol Rock Yam for Carlos May and Somacito for Amos Otis. She's been gone since 2003, and I miss her dearly.
Yeah.
But then my story got a little extended because of Bill Terry. My father was a Cubs fan. He was a National League guy. And when he retired, it was around 1980-81. They went down to Florida for about 3 years before they eventually went to Nevada and stayed there permanently on his retirement. But when he went to Florida, he stayed up in Jacksonville, Florida. And he always, even though he retired, he always had to work, and he loved golf. And he worked at the Timaquana Country Club in Jacksonville, Florida. He would set up golfers and set up caddies for golfers and do odds and ends, whatever he could do at the golf course. And he wound up meeting and becoming very good friends with Bill Terry. Bill Terry had retired down to Florida. He played a lot at Timaquana. He also played a lot at Ponte Vedra Beach, and which is further south from there. And, yeah, they became great friends in those few years. And when they both passed away, both in 2003, not too far apart. And when I was going through all the – I was the executor of the will for the family. When I was going through all his personal belongings, I found this large manila envelope, which I, of course, still have. And lo and behold, what's in there is a picture of Bill Terry shaking hands with Babe Ruth – who is in a Braves uniform.
Wow, because that's where he finished. He finished as a member of the Boston Braves, hit three homers. In a game as a member of the Braves, in fact.
And he just signed it. It was a capital W with a small M, and then in parentheses, Bill Terry.
Wow.
And I have it as a keepsake. Everybody tells me I should do something with it and see if something like that is worth anything. It's a large picture. It's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty cool.
It sounds pretty cool. Bob, thanks for the call. I love that here on Mother's Day, thinking of my mom now as we have gone deep into the life of Bill Terry. Isn't that perfect? That's the baseball fates bringing it back around. I love that. It's like, yeah, Bob's going a little long here. Should I let him go? Why, yes. Why, yes, I should let him go. And, Mom, that Bill Terry bit of information and memorabilia is for you. That is outstanding. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Lots of great texts coming from you folks. I will save and keep, and we'll open the phone lines up a little bit more a little bit later on in the show. Coming up next, though, the voice of the Cleveland Guardians, the great Tom Hamilton, joins us on Hit and Run on the Score.
Here's Clevinger's 0-1 to Naylor. Swung on, and that's driven high in the air to deep left. This has a chance. Way back. Home run, Josh Naylor. To the opposite field, and the Guardians are on the board as Naylor continues to do damage here in Chicago. And the fans know it. They're tired of it. Listen to the boos for Naylor as he does what he has done so often, and that's go deep here in Chicago.
But he's not headbutting the manager this time in Chicago.
Maybe courtesy, since Stephen Vogt did not have the helmet on.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Leave it to Tom Hamilton to drop in that reference and take us back to Josh Naylor headbutting Terry Francona in celebration. Stephen Vogt does not get the same. The Guardians are good, and yet they've lost three in a row to the White Sox. How does it happen, and how bad do they feel about it? Let's just talk a little baseball and a little broadcasting with the great Tom Hamilton, who joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is where you go. Tom Hamilton, nice to talk to you. Welcome into the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me. Hope you folks are doing well, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Happy Mother's Day to you as well. We've been talking Mother's Day as a backdrop the whole morning, asking listeners to share the impact of the mothers in their life to their relationship with baseball. I don't know if your mom had a relationship to baseball at all, or was part of your growth in that way, or you could talk about your wife, or however you want to do it. But any Mother's Day, reference, man, come to mind for you, Tom?
Yeah, just kind of gets you emotional when you think my mom has since passed, but I always felt like, you know, no child ever had a better mother than I did. Mm. And I feel the same way now about my own children, and my wife, and the mother that our children have had is every bit the same as what I had. They were just both selfless people, both all about their children and their families, and both went to a lot of baseball games, dressed up in Winter Park, be it in Wisconsin where I grew up, or be it in Cleveland, Ohio, where our kids were playing. So I've been very blessed with not only a great mom, but a great wife who's a tremendous mother as well. And, you know, they're the ones that warm up the meals when you come back from practice late and everybody else is eating. And we just can't thank them enough for everything they do.
Good stuff from Tom Hamilton. All right, so Stephen Vogt, it seems like this thing hasn't missed a beat post Terry Francona, and I'm such a big fan of Francona as a guy and as a manager. What does Stephen Vogt have on the personality front that has jumped out to you as a good fit for baseball manager, Tom?
I think there's a lot of similarities, really, even though this is Stephen Vogt's maiden voyage as a major league manager. But they're both very self-deprecating. They both feel it's about the players, not about themselves. And they both really had to fight their way in regards to having major league careers. The difference was Tito was a superstar coming out of college. You know, he had an incredible career at the University of Arizona. He still holds the College World Series record with 7 consecutive at-bats with base hits. He led Arizona to a national championship. He was a first-round pick. You know, he was going to be a star with the Montreal Expos. And when he blew out his knee in a ballgame at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, his career was never the same again because, of course, back then, you know, they didn't have the kind of ACL surgeries and knowledge that we currently have. And that changed the entire dynamic of his career from a guy that was a great hitter to a guy that really had to fight his way through a 10-plus year career and, you know, not become the star that everybody envisioned. You know, Stephen Vogt didn't get to the major leagues until he was 27 years of age and then had a 10-year career. So I think because of the trials and tribulations that both those guys went through as players, they have great empathy for all 26 men on their ball club. They can relate to the guy that, you know, is maybe the star, but they also relate to the guy that's your 26th man. And because of that, you know, there's a personal relationship there that those players have with their manager. And because those managers, both Tito and Stephen Vogt, they've sat in that other chair when they were a player being told they were being released or being sent back to the minor leagues. There are some guys that become major league managers that were stars and never had that conversation because, you know, they went out on their own terms. So I think there's a lot of similarities, and Stephen Vogt's been very quick to point out that, look, I feel like I inherited a mansion from Tito, and what I'm doing is maybe changing the paint color in some of the rooms. So he has great respect for what Tito built here in his 11 years and what this ball club has done being relevant really every year. I think the great stat, Matt, in Tito's 11 years as manager, everyone talks about the World Series, the six playoffs, but in those 11 years, only 25 games did Cleveland play under Tito in which they were mathematically eliminated. That's pretty astounding.
Yeah. 25 games in 11 years in which they were mathematically eliminated. Otherwise, they were going to the ballpark with purpose, and fans believed the game mattered that day. What a gift.
Exactly.
My goodness. I love the description of being left a mansion, because it's not as if the mansion has, a Ferrari and, a Ferrari out front and fine crystal on every table and, you know, $10,000 couches and a pool. So what is the mansion? The mansion must be the development system, the relationship between the coaches and the front office, the communication systems that are set up. Like, what is the mansion, Tom?
I think you nailed it, Matt. I think it's all of the above. And, I think Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff and the rest of the front office have proven that they know what they're doing with limited resources. I mean, I believe that right now this is the third lowest payroll in all of baseball. Sure. And, you know, it is what it is. And when you take the job in Cleveland, you know, whether you're the manager or whether you're the president or whether you're the GM, you're not going to have some of the financial revenue streams that other ball clubs have. And so you've got to do the best you can with what you have. And it doesn't give you much of a margin for error. And they've done an incredible job in their player development. I think everyone knows how well they've done developing pitching. Now, right now, you know, ironically, that's the one area this ball club is very thin in, and that is starting pitching, not only on the big league level, but down in the minor leagues.
Tom, I was doing my research, and I'm like, all right, well, who's this year's version of Kluber? Who's the Bieber? Like, who's the guy? And they're really, I mean, Tristan McKenzie's off to a very nice start and looked good yesterday, but it's not as if that next man up is there, as there always seemed to be. It's not the model right now.
No, it's not. And again, I think it proves no matter how good you are at it, you know, there's no guarantee that every year you're going to have that kind of surplus down in the minor leagues. If the game were that easy, everybody would be doing it. And, you know, they've lost Shane Bieber for the year. Gavin Williams, who was a really impressive rookie a year ago, best case scenario, he doesn't pitch until early June. And, you know, Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen, who were rookies along with Gavin Williams a year ago, that was the next wave. You know, they've been a little bit inconsistent. And again, it's their sophomore year, so teams have a book on them that they didn't have a year ago. And so it's a game, as you know, of adjustments. Mm-hmm. And now Tanner and Logan have to make those adjustments to the scouting reports and whatnot. So, you know, the ball club has, you know, had an incredible start. I'm surprised. I mean, you don't go into a season expecting to lose, but, you know, we didn't make many additions, really, from what was the ball club a year ago that finished under 500. And it's a ball club that, again, we don't have much of a margin for error. Now, everybody is dealing with injuries. You know, look what the White Sox did. I mean, the first time we saw Chicago, they were without Moncada, Roberts, and Jimenez. Well, when you're without your three best offensive players, guess what? You're not scoring runs. I don't care who you are. And now they have Jimenez back, and, you know, the Ramos kid has come up and really given them a spark.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, the big thing for the White Sox, what we have seen this weekend, Matt, they're pitching. You know, they weren't pitching. When they were 3-22, they had a team ERA of over 6. Well, now that they have turned this thing around and have gone 9-6, their team ERA in that 15-game span is under 3.5. It still comes down to pitching. And, you know, Crochet, nobody was hitting him the other night.
Woo!
And, you know, you've seen some of these kids come out of the bullpen. The Leisure kid has been impressive. Maybe finally Michael Kopech has found his role, you know, and being a closer. And so, you know, that's kind of where Cleveland's at right now. They've lost Shane Bieber for the year. They're without Stephen Kwan here. And I'll tell you, Matt, without Stephen Kwan, we don't have a bona fide leadoff hitter. And it's really impacting this offense. But that doesn't take anything away from the fact Chicago's pitching has held this ball club to 6 runs this weekend. And that's how you turn it around the way the White Sox have.
You know, there's a lot of stuff I'm enjoying and the opportunity to talk to Tom Hamilton about regarding the Cleveland Guardians. But you mentioned the White Sox, and you've seen this team and you've seen this organization very closely for a number of years. And I wondered from the outside what you thought went wrong as they hit what was supposed to be the height of a winning window, and I know Rick Hahn worked hard to try and make it so and everything, but it, as you saw this thing decay the way that it did, and now they're in another rebuild, what's your perspective from the outside, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Yeah, it's a great question, Matt, and, you know, I was talking to one of the White Sox front office people earlier this morning about that, and when the White Sox went through their rebuild the first time, I can't think of a team that made better trades than the White Sox did when they traded Quintana to the Cubs, Adam Eaton to Washington, and Chris Sale to Boston. It felt like they hit a home run on all of those trades and really helped jumpstart the rebuild. Those are trades nobody can make anymore. And I think we can blame the White Sox for that, because in a lot of ways they fleeced the opposition in those trades, and they got so many great young players that led to that winning window. Nobody's giving up those kind of prospects anymore, and Chicago got them. And I'm with you. I thought this was going to be a ball club for 5 to 7 years that would be the dominant ball club in the American League Central. It just felt like COVID really hurt this ball club. Let's face it, the Dodgers can celebrate their 2020 World Series. I don't think anybody feels that was legit. That whole year was just one of those years you just wanted to get through, not only from a baseball standpoint, but from a life standpoint, mm-hmm. and try to get back to normal. And that was when the White Sox were really at their peak. And, you know, it just seems like they really got hurt by COVID and what that season could have meant. And I don't know what happened, to be honest. I mean, I think when your best players can't stay healthy, that's the first thing I would point to. They have just had a tough time keeping Robert, Jimenez, and Moncada on the field. And that's been going on now for several years.
It has. And you know what else happened, Tom? And I know, and I'm trying to think of the Cleveland comp, but it just, you guys haven't signed many free agents of value. But the two most expensive contracts in White Sox history are Andrew Benintendi and Yasmani Grandal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know. And
they haven't worked out.
Nope. And Dallas Keuchel, you know, Dallas Keuchel's another in the same window. Yeah. Three contracts over 50 mil that none of them worked out. So you got to choose
and
right.
Yet, you know what? They took a chance. And, you know, if you don't do that, then the fans are like, well, you never spend any money. And then when you do that and it doesn't work out, well, then you're called an idiot for trying to make those things work. So you're kind of, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And so, you know, they had some things that didn't work out. I mean, it just felt like that rotation went downhill all at once. I mean, even Lance Lynn and then Lucas Giolito. When you looked at the White Sox on paper a year ago, I didn't look at a ball club coming out of spring training that was going to lose 100 and what is it, six games or whatever it was that Chicago lost a year ago. It's just like everybody went bad at the same time. Sometimes there is no explanation, Matt. That's the beauty of our game. Sometimes you can't explain. Why didn't this work out? But if I pointed out to any two things, you pointed out to a third. But I would also point out to COVID, and I would point out that if your best players can't stay healthy, our best player has been Jose Ramirez. He plays every day. If Jose Ramirez runs into the injury bug that some of the White Sox players have been hit with, then we'll be in the same boat.
Let me ask you about a guy. There's two, I guess there's three that I love on your team. Kwan, who you mentioned, who's hurt. I think he's tremendous. Was talking about him with Nico Horner, who goes back to college days with him and has seen him play. You know, he has played against Kwan since they were like teenagers. But obviously Jose Ramirez, but man, all those Cubs trade talks about Bieber and Class A, and I kept saying, get Naylor. Do what you can. Go get Josh Naylor, man. I love his makeup. I love so much about the vibes of the man. But now he's the offense, he's producing like a superstar. What has happened to Josh Naylor here?
I think he's just matured, man. And I think, you know, like all great hitters, it takes some time to not only know themselves, but to know the league. If you see Josh Naylor swing and miss and the batting helmet goes flying, that tells him, more importantly than anybody else, that he's out of control. And he used to do that all the time. And now he'll do it occasionally, but you'll see them step out, put the helmet back on, and all of a sudden he goes, okay, I'm out of control. Cut down on the swing, get back being under control. And he's made that adjustment where, you know, he may have a wild swing here and there, but then he's back in control. Last night's a perfect example. He did that in the at-bat. And then there's a fastball running away from him, and he pounds it into the seats in left field instead of trying to pull the ball and hit it to Iowa.
Yeah.
And so that's the adjustment he's made as a hitter. You know, Matt, the one thing we all have seen in this game, the great hitters can hit anyone's fastball. He can hit anyone's fastball. And if you can hit the fastball, you've got a chance to have a really good career. And I think he's maybe one of the least publicized impact hitters in the middle of anybody's order.
Tom, lovely to talk to you. Hope you're healthy and you sound great. And keep going. Enjoy your season. And we'll talk to you down the road.
Matt, I appreciate you having me on. All the best, and thanks again.
You got it. It's Tom Hamilton of Cleveland. A terrific episode of my podcast, The PBP, Voices of Baseball, which you can find anywhere you get podcasts, from Tom Hamilton from last year. By the way, this week, on the PBP, Wayne Randazzo, old friend of the Score, now the Angels television broadcaster and an emboldened man in full, with a loud, loud voice, willing to say stuff. So is Tom Hamilton. This is him last night about a bad play made by Andrew Benintendi.
Here's Andrew Benintendi. The pitch, he shows bunt, and he bunted it back foul. That was an odd-looking bunt attempt. Tell you what, folks, there hasn't been much normal about this game. It's 2-0 Chicago, third inning. Just has a weird vibe to it. Benintendi struck out looking his first time. The set, the pitch. He swings away, fouls it down the left side, 0-2. How about having your number five hitter bunt? A guy that got the biggest contract in White Sox history.
Oh, yeah.
5 years, $75 million. This is year two, and the White Sox are regretting that signing. Benintendi just seems like he's fallen off a cliff. Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a foul back. Man, he was seemed like a really good player when we saw him in Boston and that one year in Kansas City, too.
Yeah, the White Sox have not gotten that player. No. And at this stage of his career, you wonder if that player returns.
Yeah, you do.
Or is this what it is?
Oh, I think this is what it is. Maybe not this bad. An OPS of 507. He's a minus 1.4 war player, and that's ESPN's forgiving version of war. Dude's hitting a .194. Oh, God. Yeah. Bad choices. Team of the moment coming up. We'll look at the leaderboard leading up. A special treat from Steve Albini, Craig Counsell on the evolution of the game, and your phone calls continuing on Hit and Run on the Score.
It's David Eckstein.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Infield in, and Maldonado gets it past the diving shortstop. An RBI single as Lopez scores. White Sox take a 2-0 lead in the second.
Martin Maldonado with an RBI single, that coming after a Nicky Lopez RBI double. Nicky Lopez had his first RBI of the season with the White Sox, and Nicky was laughing about it. Said, that's comical. It's good. But he knows it's comical to be this far in and have your first RBI. But hey, man, White Sox have won 4 in a row. They're 9-6 in their last 15 and playing pretty well and on the verge of a possible sweep of the Cleveland Guardians, who we just prayed to a little bit as an organization with Tom Hamilton, but frankly, justifiably so. Talking Mother's Day as well with you all morning long. This is Mark in Barrington on 670 The Score. What's up, Mark? How are you?
Hey, Speaks. Hey, Mark. Johnson calling here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. I got you, Mark. Carry on, sir.
Okay. I just switched it off the speaker.
Yeah.
So, I've never called in, but you're talking about Mother's Day, and I got a couple of quick ones for you.
Okay.
My mom was a diehard sports fan, especially baseball, and I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota. I've lived here all of my adult life. But when we were growing up, we were White Sox fans because the White Sox had a farm team, the Class C Northern League in Duluth, the Duluth Superior. They called them the Twi Sox. Because of the Twin Ports, Superior, Duluth Superior is known as the Twin Ports. Anyway, my dad was a volunteer doctor for the White Sox farm team. And in 1959, my mom and dad got to go to all the home games here in Chicago. I've got their tickets on the wall, all that stuff. And as a result, even though the Twins came to Minnesota in, I think, 61, we were still White Sox fans. Anyway, my mom and dad went to the White Sox game in 59, and my two sons, by coincidence, one graduated from college in 2009, the other one graduated from high school in 2009, and we had a big family celebration. My mom came down from Minnesota, and we went to the White Sox game, and we got it up on the board that my mom was attending her first White Sox game in 50 years. Because she'd been there in 59,
wow.
And then again in 2009. And they put it up on the scoreboard. It was really cool. And we had a lot of fun with that. But the best part, the best story, my mom was a real Vikings fan. And my mom passed away sadly but peacefully in 2009, not long after she had been down here for the graduation party. And my mom was in her assisted living. My brother and sister were in the room with her on a Sunday afternoon. And the Bears were playing the Vikings in Minnesota. I've been a Bears fan for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vikings beat the Bears 41-0 that day. And that Sunday afternoon, my mom was kind of fading. We knew that she didn't have much time left. And I kind of wiggled her toe, and I said, hey, Mom, I don't know if you've been watching, but the Vikings just beat the Bears 41-0. And my mom raised her fist and said, yes. And that was the last word my mom ever said.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. The Vikings gave her a 41-0 win to send her on her way. Unreal. And stuff like that happens. Oh, man. That's heavy stuff. Thank you, Mark, for the call. I even allowed the Vikings content, Vikings Bears content here on a hit and run show on a Sunday morning. Because how do you interrupt a man when he's telling you about the demise of his mother as relates to sports. You can't. You don't, folks. What you do is you take the call, and then you comment on it afterwards as an aside to your listeners. And then you gather yourself, and you move on to a text about another listener's mother. Speaks, you always get me on these days. I'm cooking eggs for my kids and my wife with AirPods in while I cry thinking about my mom. My mom didn't get sports, which is why I appreciate that damn cowbell she got and rang out at all my baseball games. Get a hit, ring the bell. Strike out, still ring some bell. Trips to Sport Mart. Oh, Sport Mart. I hope she saw Sport Marty when she went there. When she'd try to figure out what I needed, win or lose, she would ask if I had fun, and then we'd get Taco Bell. Man, I miss her. Thanks for being who you are. Thank you, Frank. Thank you for listening. I'm glad that you love listening. Sport Mart getting a shout out on a Sunday morning. We'll continue your phone calls and your texts about your mom as it relates to your relationship with baseball. And I got lots of stuff. Team of the Moment still coming your way. We'll look at the leaderboard with a lens firmly going through the White Sox and the Cubs, and some very exclusive Steve Albini content at the end of the hour as well. It's Cubs and Pirates coming up at noon right here on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And that's ball four, and a run will come in. It's 6-2.
Except the natives a little restless all of a sudden. And we've got a powerful left-handed hitter coming to the plate, and Michael Busch.
And a 3-0. Too high, he's walked in another, and it's 6-3. How do you like that?
Digging it.
As Skeens looks on, they're all loaded up. 3-0. And that's ball four. He walked in another. And it's 6-4. And the fans here in Pittsburgh are frustrated. And now they have four of them in the inning, and it's a one-run game. Wow! The pitch. On the ground towards the hole. Cruz backhand. Won't have a play, and we're tied. It's an infield single, and it is 6-6 as the heavens unload and it really starts to pour. And with that, Andy Fletcher says, get the tarp on the field. The Cubs have come all the way back. Pirates taking the field, and we are ready to restart this ball game. How about it? All loaded up, 3-0. And he walked him on four pitches. Holy cow. And the Cubs now have the lead. It is 7-6. Holderman, a 3-1. Inside, he walked him, and it's the sixth bases loaded walk in the inning. And the Cubs have an 8-6 lead, a game they once trailed 6-1.
We've got to be looking at some kind of a major league record here, don't we?
The last team to draw six bases loaded walks in one inning was the 1959 Chicago White Sox. The Go-Go White Sox drew eight bases loaded walks in the seventh inning of a game on April 22nd. That was absolutely bananas. Highlights courtesy of the Marquee Sports Network. The Pirates threw 55 pitches in that inning, 20 for strikes. They threw 35 balls in one inning. And then, of course, hit a three-run homer and hung on to win the game. How do you lose the game where a team gives you six bases loaded walks? And my God, anybody ever have an anxiety attack out there where you've got the anxiety and you know it's building and you're like, you start to think to yourself, I must control this anxiety. And that, of course, is the worst thing you can think to yourself in order to control the anxiety. And it just rolls upon itself and feeds itself and is a freaking awful and horrible experience until you find your way to a Xanax or do whatever the hell else you need to do. That was going on with the entire pitching staff of the Pittsburgh Pirates. All of them. Can't find the plate. Can't find the plate. All right, I need to find the plate. I really need to find the plate. I can't find the plate. I still can't find the plate. Then the crowd starts to boo and gets all up in your business, and you're like, shut up. Shut up. I'm having trouble finding the plate, and you're not helping.
I understand. I know.
I know. I'm aware of how poorly I'm doing. Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that. How about having my back a little bit? Then you throw a strike, and the crowd cheers, and you're like, oh, I get it. Ha, ha, ha. Just freaking miserable. Felt bad for a couple of Pirates jamokes during that inning. And then there's a rain delay, and they replace somebody with another somebody, and that somebody can't do anything. And it's just, wow, whew. And still you lose that game? What the hell, man?
And I try not to complain about them too much because it can feel like a crutch. But, man, that felt like the most Cubs game I've dealt with in a minute. Like, and they've been so good this year.
What
so
is that? What does that even mean, Sean?
It's just like it's, what,
this is a they won the World Series. Didn't that reset things a little bit?
I think it made it worse.
How did it make it worse? Made you think
we know what it's supposed to look like. So God. And it hasn't looked like it since.
No, it really hasn't. Oh, man. Well, there's been times. There's That's been moments. Yeah. There were parts of last year. No, I understand. I understand. Look, I thought Elgin Clues said it well. This is a gift to have relevant and important baseball.
It sure is.
To be living and dying with every game. But you're so convinced that this is a year that's going to be good and that they're going to go out and get everything they need, that you want them to go out and get it now. Who's the bullpen option that you could go out and get? They're sorting it out. The hard part is they're sorting out everything they have in-house, and then they'll figure out. And they're not going to go trade for just, like, somebody. Like Tanner Scott. You know what I mean? The closer for the Marlins, the lefty. You're not going to do that. It's not as much torture as it feels like, okay? There's no way that that felt like a shiny, shiny, shiny piece of leather yesterday. No, it didn't. It wasn't quite like that. Unsettling? Unrewarding? Sure. But you're going to sort out what you have. And that means Ben Brown is your bullpen, possibly as a piggyback option or a long man, seemingly. I hope not to see Keegan Thompson in a game of consequence anytime soon. But then again, I said that last week. And then they sent him down and they brought him back up. What are we doing? What are we doing? I don't know. Now Hayden Wesneski to the bullpen. Maybe that'll solve some things. Jim and Steger has texted it and said, Happy Mother's Day to all the moms. Jim? I agree. Another texter has gotten in and said, Bill Terry. Bill Terry, you're exactly right. Another texter. Wasn't the last National Leaguer to hit 400 in like 1930? Coming up on 100 years. Yeah, you bet. Ted Williams in 1946 is the last ballplayer to hit 400. The last National Leaguer to do it was Bill Terry. And I believe 1930, might have been 1931. But either way, that's my mom's baseball trivia question of choice. The woman has been gone since 1998. And yet I know that that's the baseball trivia question that she had in her back pocket anytime she was forced to prove her baseball bona fides. She could talk about seeing some incredible players with the New York Giants and with the Trenton Giants minor league team, and of course, being with my dad for a million games. But you could also talk about Bill Terry. Got some of your texts at 312-644-6767 about your mothers and baseball. Here's one. Growing up in a Mexican soccer fan household, I was the only sibling to love baseball and football. One year on my birthday, my mom gifted me my first baseball jersey, and it was Alfonso Soriano's jersey. Boy, is that a core memory for me. That's awesome. Absolutely love that. It's our job as parents, whatever your kids are into, even if you're not into it, support it. Get there. That's why I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson at the Chicago Theater with my son this week. Went and saw an astrophysicist speak. Yeah. Kid had a great time. Unbelievable.
That's so cool.
It was so great, man. And now he's a soccer goalie. He was goalie for the second week in a row for his sixth grade team. And he wants, he's like, Daddy, you gonna kick balls at me? Are you gonna kick balls at me? Why, yes, yes, I am. So I need a bag
of you'd never ask.
I mean, it's not what I thought he'd, you know, what I dreamed of him asking, but he's asking. So I need a bag of soccer balls. I need some goalie gloves. I need a goalie coach. That's what I need, is a goalie coach. So I'll find one. But I'm going to pepper that kid and teach him to attack the ball.
There you go.
With Guagi, like Roma Dunze. But that will not derail our baseball conversation. Texter, hey, Matt, I'm 52. My mom passed away 11 years ago. Lots of baseball memories with my mom. One of my favorites is when I would come home from school, walking or riding a bike, my mom would be in the living room, usually ironing, with the Cubs 120 or 305 game on. She would tell me the score as I walked in the door, provide a highlight or two from the game. God, I love that. She was also always at my high school games right behind the backstop as I pitched. And we would always give each other a smile and a nod before my first pitch. Mother's Day is tough, as you know, but I have lots of great memories with her to help get through the day. Have a good one. That's from Mike in Peoria. Mike, I love that. Love both of them. You as a player. But I got to tell you, just because it's even more relatable to those of us who never got to play at that high level, like coming home from school and having her give you an update on what you've missed so far in the ball game as you pick it up from there, just freaking awesome. One more text here. The first game that my mom and I attended together was Cubs-Giants, 1968. We sat in the first row of the right field bleachers. Willie McCovey crushed one, landed several rows up, but my mom thought it was coming right at her and she ducked. After that, she always wanted to sit in the grandstands behind the screen, behind the plate. 1984, I won the ticket lottery for the first NLCS game between the Cubs and Padres. Took my mom. Wouldn't you know it, seats were located behind the screen. Fitting, Chuck. That's Chuck in Round Lake. Great stuff. Keep it coming at 312-644-6767. Got a top three Mother's Day highlights to bring you in a moment. But first, Tony in Wonder Lake. You're on Hit and Run. Good morning, Tony.
Steve, good morning. How are you? And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that might be listening. My mom's been gone almost 10 years. And although my dad would attend the Sox games, my mom and I celebrated several times with the White Sox in 83. She was right by my side. We celebrated. And one of the greatest memories of all was us sitting around as a family at the kitchen table and my dad actually being able to take apart the World Series tickets in 2005. He had the binder, and of course, you know, it's sacrilege. You can't do it because you got to return the tickets. But being able to actually take those apart as a family and seeing them win a World Series together was just absolutely incredible.
That's great stuff, Tony. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. It's 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run. We're going to talk to Tom Hamilton, the voice of the Cleveland Guardians, in a little bit. But Mother's Day baseball memories brings a bunch of different stuff to mind. And one I always think of is Joey Votto having two homers already in his back pocket as he batted in the ninth for the Reds. This is 2012 on Mother's Day. Bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth.
Here's the 2-2 to Votto. Hit deep center field.
Get up,
Hank
baby.
Hill going back at the warning track.
Oh!
It's gone! Joey Votto game, Joey. Three home runs, and look at this at home plate.
That's awesome. So four great swings that day for Votto. Three home runs, including the walk-off grand slam on Mother's Day. Terrific essay out there from Joe Posnanski, one of my favorite people to read, writing baseball about Joey Votto's three-homer day on Mother's Day. How about this one in 2010? The Oakland A's, Dallas Braden, whose mother had passed away from cancer. And Braden has told this story before on The Score because he hated Mother's Day because his mother had passed. So his mother had passed, and he always had a difficult time with it. The night before Mother's Day, he got drunk, and he's hungover on Mother's Day, and he's got to pitch. He hadn't realized that he was going to pitch, and all of a sudden he has to pitch. And he throws 27 up, 27 down, and he does that while his grandmother, who was in attendance, who had raised him, his grandmother watched on. Here's the end of Dallas Braden's perfect game.
Pennington, he's got it. Throw to first. He did it. He did it. Dallas Braden has thrown a perfect game. Holy cow, he did it. Dallas Braden's grandmother, Peggy Lindsay. Wow.
I think that's who he pointed to first before he looked to section 209.
Man, his grandmother, and she made her way down onto the field as part of the celebration. So that's Votto, and that is Dallas Braden on Mother's Day. And this one isn't quite as important, but it's indelible, and I don't think it's ever going to go away. Because you knew the 2016 Cubs were good. You knew that they were playing up in a tree, is the way that Theo Epstein had described it. At this point on Mother's Day 2016, they were 23-6 and in the 13th inning at home against the Washington Nationals.
Deep left center! Game over! Cubs win! Cubs win! Baez does it, 4-3 the final.
Pink ice cream for everybody. Well, there were plenty of opportunities for these Cub hitters to do something heroic this afternoon, and Baez delivers.
24-6 at that point. They would get all the way to 28-10. Outrageous. And the season ended very, very well. 35-14 they would get to, and the season would end very well. This is Bob in Muncie on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I called, but my call got a little longer as I was listening to the show. I called because my mother was a huge White Sox fan, and one of the famous things that she would always repeat over and over again was when Harry Carey used to pronounce all the names of the players backwards. And it was so funny because, like, one of her favorites was Sol Rock Yam for Carlos May and Somacito for Amos Otis. She's been gone since 2003, and I miss her dearly.
Yeah.
But then my story got a little extended because of Bill Terry. My father was a Cubs fan. He was a National League guy. And when he retired, it was around 1980-81. They went down to Florida for about 3 years before they eventually went to Nevada and stayed there permanently in his retirement. But when he went to Florida, he stayed up in Jacksonville, Florida. And he always, even though he retired, he always had to work, and he loved golf. And he worked at the Timaquana Country Club in Jacksonville, Florida. He would set up golfers and set up caddies for golfers and do odds and ends, whatever he could do at the golf course. And he wound up meeting and becoming very good friends with Bill Terry. Bill Terry had retired down to Florida. he played a lot at Tim Aquana. He also played a lot at Ponte Vedra Beach, and which is further south from there. And yeah, they became great friends in those few years. And when they both passed away, both in 2003, not too far apart. And when I was going through all the, I was the executor of the will for the family. When I was going through all his personal belongings, I found this large manila envelope, which I, of course, still have. And lo and behold, what's in there is a picture of Bill Terry shaking hands with Babe Ruth, who is in a Braves uniform.
Wow, because that's where he finished. He finished as a member of the Boston Braves, hit three homers. In a game as a member of the Braves, in fact.
And he just signed it. It was a capital W with a small M, and then in parentheses, Bill Terry.
Wow.
And I have it as a keepsake. Everybody tells me I should do something with it and see if something like that is worth anything. It's a large picture. It's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty cool.
It sounds pretty cool. Bob, thanks for the call. I love that here on Mother's Day, thinking of my mom now as we have gone deep into the life of Bill Terry. Isn't that perfect? That's the baseball fates bringing it back around. I love that. It's like, yeah, Bob's going a little long here. Should I let him go? Why, yes. Why, yes, I should let him go. And mom, that Bill Terry bit of information and memorabilia is for you. That is outstanding. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Lots of great text coming from you folks. I will save and keep, and we'll open the phone lines up a little bit more a little bit later on in the show. Coming up next, though, the voice of the Cleveland Guardians, the great Tom Hamilton, joins us on Hit and Run on the Score.
Here's Clevinger's 0-1 to Naylor. Swung on, and that's driven high in the air to deep left. This has a chance. Way back. Home run, Josh Naylor. To the opposite field, and the Guardians are on the board as Naylor continues to do damage here in Chicago. And the fans know it. They're tired of it. Listen to the boos for Naylor as he does what he has done so often, and that's go deep here in Chicago.
But he's not headbutting the manager this time in Chicago.
Maybe courtesy, since Stephen Vogt did not have the helmet on.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Leave it to Tom Hamilton to drop in that reference and take us back to Josh Naylor headbutting Terry Francona in celebration. Stephen Vogt does not get the same. The Guardians are good, and yet they've lost three in a row to the White Sox. How does it happen, and how bad do they feel about it? Let's just talk a little baseball and a little broadcasting with the great Tom Hamilton, who joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is where you go. Tom Hamilton, nice to talk to you. Welcome into the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me. Hope you folks are doing well, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Happy Mother's Day to you as well. We've been talking Mother's Day as a backdrop the whole morning, asking listeners to share the impact of the mothers in their life to their relationship with baseball. I don't know if your mom had a relationship to baseball at all, or was part of your growth in that way, or you could talk about your wife, or however you want to do it. But any Mother's Day, reference, man, come to mind for you, Tom?
Yeah, just kind of gets you emotional when you think my mom has since passed, but I always felt like, you know, no child ever had a better mother than I did. And I feel the same way now about my own children, and my wife, and the mother that our children have had is every bit the same as what I had. They were just both selfless people, both all about their children and their families, and both went to a lot of baseball games, dressed up in Winter Park, as be it in Wisconsin where I grew up, or be it in Cleveland, Ohio, where our kids were playing. So I've been very blessed with not only a great mom, but a great wife who's a tremendous mother as well. And
you know, they're the ones that warm up the meals when you come back from practice late and everybody else is eating, and we just can't thank them enough for everything they do.
Good stuff from Tom Hamilton. All right, so Stephen Vogt, it seems like this thing hasn't missed a beat post Terry Francona, and I'm such a big fan of Francona as a guy and as a manager. What does Stephen Vogt have on the personality front that has jumped out to you as a good fit for baseball manager, Tom?
I think there's a lot of similarities, really, even though this is Stephen Vogt's maiden voyage as a major league manager. But they're both very self-deprecating. They both feel it's about the players, not about themselves. And they both really had to fight their way in regards to having major league careers. The difference was Tito was a superstar coming out of college. You know, he had an incredible career at the University of Arizona. He still holds the College World Series record with 7 consecutive at-bats with base hits. He led Arizona to a national championship. He was a first-round pick. You know, he was going to be a star with the Montreal Expos. And when he blew out his knee in a ballgame at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, his career was never the same again because, of course, back then, you know, they didn't have the kind of ACL surgeries and knowledge that we currently have. And that changed the entire dynamic of his career from a guy that was a great hitter to a guy that really had to fight his way through a 10-plus year career and, you know, not become the star that everybody envisioned. You know, Stephen Vogt didn't get to the major leagues until he was 27 years of age and then had a 10-year career. So I think because of the trials and tribulations that both those guys went through as players, they have great empathy for all 26 men on their ball club. They can relate to the guy that, you know, is maybe the star, but they also relate to the guy that's your 26th man. And because of that, you know, there's a personal relationship there that those players have with their manager. And because those managers, both Tito and Stephen Vogt, they've sat in that other chair when they were a player being told they were being released or being sent back to the minor leagues. There are some guys that become major league managers that were stars and never had that conversation because, you know, they went out on their own terms. So I think there's a lot of similarities, and Stephen Vogt's been very quick to point out that, look, I feel like I inherited a mansion from Tito, and what I'm doing is maybe changing the paint color in some of the rooms. So he has great respect for what Tito built here in his 11 years and what this ball club has done being relevant really every year. I think the great stat, Matt, in Tito's 11 years as manager, everyone talks about the World Series, the 6 playoffs. But in those 11 years, only 25 games did Cleveland play under Tito in which they were mathematically eliminated. Wow. That's pretty astounding.
Yeah. 25 games in 11 years in which they were mathematically eliminated. Otherwise, they were going to the ballpark with purpose and fans believed the game mattered that day. What a gift.
Exactly.
My goodness. I love the description of being left a mansion because it's not as if the mansion has, a Ferrari and, a Ferrari out front and fine crystal on every table and, you know, $10,000 couches and a pool. So what is the mansion? The mansion must be the development system, the relationship between the coaches and the front office, the communication systems that are set up. Like, what is the mansion, Tom?
I think you nailed it, Matt. I think it's all of the above. And, I think Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff and the rest of the front office have proven that they know what they're doing with limited resources. I mean, I believe that right now this is the third lowest payroll in all of baseball. And, you know, it is what it is. And when you take the job in Cleveland, you know whether you're the manager or whether you're the president or whether you're the GM, you're not going to have some of the financial revenue streams that other ball clubs have. And so you've got to do the best you can with what you have. And it doesn't give you much of a margin for error. And they've done an incredible job in their player development. I think everyone knows how well they've done developing pitching. Now, right now, you know, ironically, that's the one area this ball club is very thin in, and that is starting pitching, not only on the big league level, but down in the minor leagues.
Tom, I was doing my research, and I'm like, all right, well, who's this year's version of of Kluber? Who's the Bieber? Like, who's the guy? And they're really, I mean, Tristan McKenzie's off to a very nice start and looked good yesterday, but it's not as if that next man up is there, as there always seemed to be. It's not the model right now.
No, it's not. And again, I think it proves no matter how good you are at it, you know, there's no guarantee that every year you're going to have that kind of surplus down in the minor leagues. If the game were that easy, everybody would be doing it. And, you know, they've lost Shane Bieber for the year. Gavin Williams, who was a really impressive rookie a year ago, best case scenario, he doesn't pitch until early June. And, you know, Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen, who were rookies along with Gavin Williams a year ago, that was the next wave. You know, they've been a little bit inconsistent. And again, it's their sophomore year, so teams have a book on them that they didn't have a year ago. And so it's a game, as you know, of adjustments. Mm-hmm. And now Tanner and Logan have to make those adjustments to the scouting reports and whatnot. So, you know, the ball club has, you know, had an incredible start. I'm surprised. I mean, you don't go into a season expecting to lose. But, you know, we didn't make many additions, really, from what was the ball club a year ago that finished under 500, and it's a ball club that, again, we don't have much of a margin for error. Now, everybody is dealing with injuries. You know, look what the White Sox did. I mean, the first time we saw Chicago, they were without Moncada, Roberts, and Jimenez. Well, when you're without your three best offensive players, guess what? You're not scoring runs. I don't care who you are. And now they have Jimenez back, and, you know, the Ramos kid has come up and really given them a spark.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing for the White Sox, what we have seen this weekend, Matt, they're pitching. You know, they weren't pitching. When they were 3-22, they had a team ERA of over 6. Well, now that they have turned this thing around and have gone 9-6, their team ERA in that 15-game span is under 3.5. It still comes down to pitching. And, you know, Crochet, nobody was hitting him the other night.
Woo!
And, you know, you've seen some of these kids come out of the bullpen. The Leisure kid has been impressive. Maybe finally Michael Kopech has found his role, you know, and being a closer. And so, you know, that's kind of where Cleveland's at right now. They've lost Shane Bieber for the year. They're without Stephen Kwan here. And I'll tell you, Matt, without Stephen Kwan, we don't have a bona fide leadoff hitter. And it's really impacting this offense. But that doesn't take anything away from the fact Chicago's pitching has held this ball club to 6 runs this weekend. And that's how you turn it around the way the White Sox have.
You know, there's a lot of stuff I'm enjoying and the opportunity to talk to Tom Hamilton about regarding the Cleveland Guardians. But you mentioned the White Sox, and you've seen this team and you've seen this organization very closely for a number of years. And I wondered from the outside what you thought went wrong as they hit what was supposed to be the height of a winning window. And I know Rick Hahn worked hard to try and make it so and everything, but as you saw this thing decay the way that it did, and now they're in another rebuild, what's your perspective from the outside, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Yeah, it's a great question, Matt. And, you know, I was talking to one of the White Sox front office people earlier this morning about that. And when the White Sox went through their rebuild the first time, I can't think of a team that made better trades than the White Sox did when they traded Quintana to the Cubs, Adam Eaton to Washington, and Chris Sale to Boston. It felt like they hit a home run on all of those trades and really helped jumpstart the rebuild. Those are trades nobody can make anymore. And I think we can blame the White Sox for that, because in a lot of ways they fleeced the opposition in those trades, and they got so many great young players that led to that winning window. Nobody's giving up those kind of prospects anymore, and Chicago got them. And I'm with you. I thought this was going to be a ball club for 5 to 7 years that would be the dominant ball club in the American League Central. It just felt like COVID really hurt this ball club. That was, let's face it, the Dodgers can celebrate their 2020 World Series. I don't think anybody feels that was legit. That whole year was just one of those years you just wanted to get through, not only from a baseball standpoint, but from a life standpoint, mm-hmm. and try to get back to normal. And that was when the White Sox were really at their peak. And, it just seems like they really got hurt by COVID and what that season could have meant. And I don't know what happened, to be honest. I mean, I think when your best players can't stay healthy, that's the first thing I would point to. They have just had a tough time keeping Robert Jimenez and Moncada on the field. And that's been going on now for several years.
It has. You know what else happened, Tom? And I know, and I'm trying to think of the Cleveland comp, but it just, you guys haven't signed many free agents of value, but the two most expensive contracts in White Sox history are Andrew Benintendi and Yasmani Grandal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, and
they haven't worked out.
Nope. And Dallas Keuchel, Dallas Keuchel's another in the same window. Yeah. Three contracts over 50 mil that none of them worked out. So you got to choose
and
right.
Yet, you know what? They took a chance. And, if you don't do that, then the fans are like, well, you never spend any money. Mm-hmm. And then when you do that and it doesn't work out, well, then you're called an idiot for trying to make those things work. So you're kind of, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And so, they had some things that didn't work out. I mean, it just felt like that rotation went downhill all at once. I mean, even Lance Lynn and then Lucas Giolito. When you looked at the White Sox on paper a year ago, I didn't look at a ball club coming out of spring training that was going to lose 100 and what is it, six games or whatever it was that Chicago lost a year ago. It's just like everybody went bad at the same time. Sometimes there is no explanation, Matt. That's the beauty of our game. Sometimes you can't explain why didn't this work out. But if I pointed out to any two things, you pointed out to a third. Mm-hmm. But I would also point out to COVID. And I would point out that if your best players can't stay healthy, our best player has been Jose Ramirez. He plays every day. If Jose Ramirez runs into the injury bug that some of the White Sox players have been hit with, then we'll be in the same boat.
Let me ask you about a guy. There's two, I guess there's three that I love on your team. Kwan, who you mentioned, who's hurt, I think he's tremendous. Was talking about him with Nico Horner, who goes back to college days with him and has seen him play. He has played against Kwan since they were like teenagers. But obviously Jose Ramirez. But man, all those Cubs trade talks about Bieber and Class A, and I kept saying, get Naylor. Do what you can. Go get Josh Naylor, man. I love his makeup. I love so much about the vibes of the man. But now he's the offense. He's producing like a superstar. What has happened to Josh Naylor here?
I think he's just matured, Matt. And I think, like all great hitters, it takes some time to not only know themselves, but to know the league. If you see Josh Naylor swing and miss, and the batting helmet goes flying, that tells him, more importantly than anybody else, that he's out of control. And he used to do that all the time. And now, he'll do it occasionally, but you'll see them step out, put the helmet back on, and all of a sudden he goes, okay, I'm out of control. Cut down on the swing, get back being under control. And he's made that adjustment where, he may have a wild swing here and there, but then he's back in control. Last night's a perfect example. He did that in the at-bat, and then there's a fastball running away from him, and he pounds it into the seats in left field instead of trying to pull the ball and hit it to Iowa.
Yeah.
And so that's the adjustment he's made as a hitter. Matt, the one thing we all have seen in this game, the great hitters can hit anyone's fastball. He can hit anyone's fastball. And if you can hit the fastball, you've got a chance to have a really good career. And I think he's maybe one of the least publicized impact hitters in the middle of anybody's order.
Tom, lovely to talk to you. Hope you're healthy and you sound great. And keep going. Enjoy your season. And we'll talk to you down the road.
Matt, I appreciate you having me on. All the best, and thanks again.
You got it. It's Tom Hamilton of Cleveland. A terrific episode of my podcast, the PBP, Voices of Baseball, which you can find anywhere you get podcasts, from Tom Hamilton from last year. By the way, this week, on the PBP, Wayne Randazzo, old friend of the Score, now the Angels television broadcaster, and an emboldened man in full, with a loud, loud voice, willing to say stuff. So is Tom Hamilton. This is him last night about a bad play made by Andrew Benintendi.
Here's Andrew Benintendi. The pitch, he shows bunt, and he bunted it back foul. That was an odd-looking bunt attempt. Tell you what, folks, there hasn't been much normal about this game. It's 2-0 Chicago, third inning. Just has a weird vibe to it. Benintendi struck out looking his first time. The set, the pitch. He swings away, fouls it down the left side, 0-2. How about having your number five hitter bunt? A guy that got the biggest contract in White Sox history.
Oh, yeah.
5 years, $75 million. This is year two, and the White Sox are regretting that signing. Benintendi just seems like he's fallen off a cliff. Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a foul back. Man, he seemed like a really good player when we saw him in Boston and that 1 year in Kansas City, too.
Yeah, the White Sox have not gotten that player. No. And at this stage of his career, you wonder if that player returns.
Yeah, you do.
Or is this what it is?
Oh, I think this is what it is. Maybe not this bad. An OPS of 507. He's a minus 1.4 war player, and that's ESPN's forgiving version of war. Dude's hitting .194. Oh, God. Yeah. Bad choices. Team of the moment coming up. We'll look at the leaderboard leading up. A special treat from Steve Albini. Craig Counsell on the evolution of the game. And your phone calls continuing on Hit and Run on the Score.
It's David Eckstein.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Infield in. And Maldonado gets it past the diving shortstop. An RBI single as Lopez scores. White Sox take a 2-0 lead in the second.
Martin Maldonado with an RBI single. That coming after a Nicky Lopez RBI double. Nicky Lopez had his first RBI of the season with the White Sox. And Nicky was laughing about it. Said, that's comical. It's good. But he knows it's comical to be this far in and have your first RBI. But hey, man, White Sox have won 4 in a row. They're 9-6 in their last 15. And playing pretty well. And on the verge of a possible sweep of the Cleveland Guardians, who we just prayed to a little bit as an organization with Tom Hamilton, but frankly, justifiably so. Talking Mother's Day as well with you all morning long. This is Mark in Barrington on 670 The Score. What's up, Mark? How are you?
Hey, Speaks. Hey, Mark. Johnson calling here. Can
hey, Mark.
You hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. I got you, Mark. Carry on, sir.
Okay. I just switched it off the speaker.
Yeah.
So I've never called in, but you're talking about Mother's Day, and I got a couple of quick ones for you.
Okay.
My mom was a diehard sports fan, especially baseball, and I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota. I've lived here all of my adult life. But when we were growing up, we were White Sox fans because the White Sox had a farm team, the Class C Northern League in Duluth, the Duluth Superior. They called them the Twi Sox. Because of the Twin Ports, Superior, Duluth Superior is known as the Twin Ports. Anyway, my dad was a volunteer doctor for the White Sox farm team. And in 1959, my mom and dad got to go to all the home games here in Chicago. I've got their tickets on the wall, all that stuff. And as a result, even though the Twins came to Minnesota in, I think, 61, we were still White Sox fans. Anyway, my mom and dad went to the White Sox game in 59, and my two sons, by coincidence, one graduated from college in 2009, the other one graduated from high school in 2009, and we had a big family celebration. My mom came down from Minnesota,
And we went to a White Sox game, and we got it up on the board that my mom was attending her first White Sox game in 50 years because she'd been there in 59.
Wow.
And then again in 2009. And they put it up on the scoreboard. It was really cool. And we had a lot of fun with that. But the best part, the best story, my mom was a real Vikings fan. And my mom passed away sadly but peacefully in 2009, not long after she had been down here for the graduation party. And my mom was in her assisted living. My brother and sister were in the room with her on a Sunday afternoon. And the Bears were playing the Vikings in Minnesota. I've been a Bears fan for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vikings beat the Bears 41-0 that day. And that Sunday afternoon, my mom was kind of fading. We knew that she didn't have much time left. And I kind of wiggled her toe and I said, "Hey, Mom, I don't know if you've been watching, but the Vikings just beat the Bears 41-0. And my mom raised her fist and said, "Yes." And that was the last word my mom ever said.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. The Vikings gave her a 41-0 win to send her on her way. Unreal. And stuff like that happens. Oh, man. That's heavy stuff. Thank you, Mark, for the call. I even allowed the Vikings content, Vikings-Bears content here on a hit-and-run show on a Sunday morning. Because how do you interrupt a man when he's telling you about the demise of his mother as relates to sports? You can't. You don't, folks. What you do is you take the call, and then you comment on it afterwards as an aside to your listeners. And then you gather yourself and you move on to a text about another listener's mother. Speaks, you always get me on these days. I'm cooking eggs for my kids and my wife with AirPods in while I cry thinking about my mom. My mom didn't get sports, which is why I appreciate that damn cowbell she got and rang out at all my baseball games. Get a hit, ring the bell. Strike out, still ring some bell. Trips to Sport Mart. Oh, Sport Mart. I hope she saw Sport Marty when she went there. When she'd try to figure out what I needed, win or lose, she would ask if I had fun, and then we'd get Taco Bell. Man, I miss her. Thanks for being who you are. Thank you, Frank. Thank you for listening. I'm glad that you love listening. Sport Mart getting a shout out on a Sunday morning. We'll continue your phone calls and your texts about your mom as it relates to your relationship with baseball. And I got lots of stuff. Team of the moment still coming your way. We'll look at the leaderboard with a lens firmly going through the White Sox and the Cubs, and some very exclusive Steve Albini content at the end of the hour as well. It's Cubs and Pirates coming up at noon right here on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Nor Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.